Support for this broadcast of Two Rivers 30 Minutes comes in part from a grant from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes.
From TubeCityOnline.com, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes, a weekly series of interviews with people making news around the McKeesport area. Produced by Tube City Community Media Incorporated, a nonprofit corporation. I'm Jason Toger, the executive director. On this show, we talk one-on-one with elected officials, community leaders, and others who are trying to make a difference in the Monongahela area. And we also take your questions and comments on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.
He's probably one of the best rock and rollers in Pittsburgh of the last, I don't want to embarrass him, but 40 years, 50 years, has worked with everyone, up to and including Bruce Springsteen. He is Norm Nardini, one of the godfathers of the rock and roll scene in Pittsburgh. And 50 years ago this month, he took the stage with a little band you might have heard of called Aerosmith at a giant concert, 50 to 60,000 people estimated in attendance in McKeesport, not too far from our studio, as a matter of fact. Norm Nardini is on the phone with us. Good morning, Norm.
How you doing?
Hey,
Jason. Wonderful to talk to you, man. And what a glorious day this day is. And what a glorious day that show was. It was one of the biggest shows of my life. I mean, the first big show of my life. I was pretty green at the time. I've been playing in lounge bands and, you know, little cover bands. And then I started working at this studio, and we started cutting some stuff. I was working with Bubs McKeag,
okay,
Frank Zuri, and my buddy Robbie Johns. And we put some recordings together, and we got a deal with Atlantic, and they released a single called Ain't That Peculiar, mm-hmm, which became a bit of an underground sensation. So that got us on the show. And the show was us, Diamond Rio, mm-hmm, Aerosmith, some band from Boston, and Brownsville Station from Ann Arbor, Detroit, Michigan.
And this is before you had the Tigers, correct?
This
is before you went out on your own also. So this is with Diamond Rio.
Yeah, that was I left Diamond Rio in 79 and started Norman Nardini and the Tigers in the summer of 1979. So this was like leading up to that for me. And in Diamond Rio, I wasn't the star, I was the bass player. And I kind of put the music together. I was the arranger and sang a little bit of background, but I didn't sing much at all. I really didn't see myself as a singer or guitar player at that time. I was just excited to be playing with talents like Robbie Johns and McKeag and Zuri. But anyway, the show was kind of cool. We went on first, and I remember we had our new shiny clothes on, and they dressed us up. You know, we didn't know what the hell we were doing.
I was going to ask you about that, because we're talking October 27th, 1974, at Renzi Park in McKeesport, a show that, as Norm just mentioned, Norm Nardini and his group, Diamond Rio, opening for Aerosmith, who then opened for Brownsville Station. And it's funny to me that nobody remembers Brownsville Station. They remember you, and they remember Aerosmith, but Brownsville Station, I don't know that anybody really...
They had a huge hit. That ended
Smoking
up,
in the Boys' Room, wasn't it?
Right, and then that became a hit for the group from L.A., remember, mm-hmm, back in the 80s?
Mm-hmm. Motley Crue.
Girls,
yeah.
That band.
Yeah.
So the hit they had was significant.
Mm-hmm.
They had some other things out, but nothing that touched that. But anyway, when we went on, but before we went on, the thing I remember first about that show is we were standing behind the stage, like behind the band show there in Renzi,
yeah,
and there was kind of like a flat area in a football field, I think it was,
yep,
and a helicopter comes flying in, and they helicoptered Aerosmith onto that field. And that was, like, to us, that was freaky as can be, you know. So they got helicoptered in, and they came up backstage, and they were kind of dressed kind of nice and looked kind of nice. And then when they got dressed for the show, they, like, took off the nice clothes they had and put on these rags that looked like they smelled and hadn't dried from last night's gig. And this is a true story.
I'm thinking of the cover of their album that was out then, which was, I think, Get Your Wings. And, yeah, that's what they look like on the album.
Oh, no, it was way before that.
Oh, okay, okay.
It was the album with Dream On and Mama Kin.
Okay.
And in fact, the guy that produced that album for them ended up producing the next Diamond Rio album was this English guy named Adrian Barber. We ended up working with him a year or two down the road. The same guy that produced Dream On. And anyway, I just was kind of watching them. And one thing I noticed is that they were little like us. You know, they weren't big people. They were just small dudes. And They kind of stayed to themselves, and on stage they stayed together. Like, you know, I was watching and learning, you know, like crazy learning. And you know, the two guitar players, neither one was a great guitar player, but they played very complementary, and everything they did matched what the other guy did, and they always left room for each other. There was kind of like an orchestral arrangement thing involved in their guitar playing, which ended up being part of who they were, you know, as the years went on. So, I mean, it was like unique to watch the early way they approached guitar playing. You know, they weren't flashy guys. They were simple guys and played in capital letters. They had a drummer that played real straight, Joey Kramer. He wasn't real flashy. He pondered and he kept the beat and had a good feel. The bass player really was almost invisible. And then Tyler was out front, you know. And so I watched all that real closely. I remember they did Mama Kin, and I remember they closed their set with Train Kept a Rollin', a similar arrangement to what the Yardbirds did back in the 60s of that same song. So I watched them real close. And at the time, we were very impressed with them, and we started pursuing their manager. They had a manager named David Krebs out of Boston, and we chased him for a couple of years to try and get him interested in us, and he never did. But we didn't really talk to them, you know. They didn't really want to mingle with anybody. But the crazy thing is they played and ripped the house down, and then Brownsville Station come on, and they were kind of a little bit opposite, you know. They were a three-piece at the time, bass player, and then Cub Coda, the guy that wrote that song, and the lead singer. And they had a drummer named Henry Weck, who ended up becoming a producer and ended up producing Highway Song Going On and On. For Blackfoot, he ended up producing the Blackfoot records. A talented producer, his name was Henry Weck, and he was the drummer for them. And anyway, after the show, the manager of Brownsville Station come up to me and he says, "Hey, man, we think you're cool." I says, "I know my band's pretty hip, right?" He goes, "Not them." He says, "I like you." And I said, "Oh." And he said, "We want you to join Brownsville Station." And I was like, "What?" And he says, we want to take our bass player and put him on front on guitar with the other guy and have you play bass for us." And I said, "Well, I got to think about that." So I thought about it for a couple of weeks, and then I called him back. They were out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I said, "You know what? I've decided I really don't want to do it. I really like my band, and I feel like we're doing something really cool." And then I said to him, "Hey, would you guys be interested in handling our band?" And this guy said, "I'd be interested in working with you." So they ended up working with us for a while, for a couple of years. And we were just too crazy for them. They were like real straight, square Midwesterners. And we were like guys that were looking for the end of the moon, you know. Uh-huh. And so we scared them away. But it was probably for the best, you know. They weren't the best management team out there. So a lot of things happened that day that, you know, like really started a rock and roll life for me.
Norman Nardini is on the phone with us. His 2019 album, Notorious, you can buy from Apple Music. Others albums up there as well, including Bonafide and Redemption. And we're talking right now first about October 27th, 1974, when you were the opening act for Aerosmith and Brownsville Station in a concert that they said 50 to 60,000 people. Is that accurate to you?
I don't think there was that many.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Yeah, but I was wondering if it was a little bit exaggerated.
But it was a hillside full of folks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I put it like this. I looked at a picture of me from that day. My skin was white. I was so, you know, I was so overwhelmed by the moment because of the size of the crowd. So it wasn't, when they say 50 or 60,000, I don't believe that's accurate. But I know there was definitely upwards of 20, maybe close to 30.
Okay.
But that's an estimate 50 years later.
How did you get the gig? Do you remember how you got the gig? Who approached you?
I don't remember that. We were being managed out of a studio in East Liberty called Fox Studio. That's where that's where we would record all the time. Mm-hmm. And we had some guys that were working with us, were pretty good, decent local hustlers, were really pushing for us to get some exposure. Like I say, we got that record deal with Atlantic pretty quick, and boom, it was on the radio like 20 minutes later, it mm-hmm. seemed like, you know. And so I guess through that record being on the radio is how we got on the show.
I don't want to just talk about this because you've had a big career, and I want to take the advantage to talk with you a little bit about that. But I want to wrap up this part of the conversation. Well-behaved crowd at that 1974 concert? People behaved themselves?
As far as I can remember, totally.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was there for the music, you know. And it was cool because at that time in America, it was a time when, like, country watched Johnny Carson at night. Mm-hmm. So you know what I mean? Everybody watched the same TV shows. And everybody was into rock and roll. Mm-hmm. You know, we were a unified country in so many respects, so different than today. So, yeah, and the people, there wasn't like madness and craziness and storming the stage and all that. Mm-hmm. There was just people that were really into the music, wanting to get close to it. It was a picture of America, you know, at the time.
Well, someone said to me, because it was the radio station was 13Q that sponsored the concert, and someone said to me, you know, growing up at that time, she was a teenager, and she said everybody listened to 13Q, and probably some were listening to KQV or some were listening to Whammo, but I don't know that a radio station has that kind of. You mentioned the unifying impact. I don't know that there is such a unifying force like that in pop culture.
No. Like in today's America, everybody has fragmented.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it's turned out. And also, like, everything has changed. You know, radio was huge at the time. Yeah. Newspapers were huge. You know, radio isn't huge anymore. They don't even have newspapers no
yeah.
more. You know what I mean? All those kinds of things. So it was really a different time in America.
And
everybody loved rock and roll. We could all agree on that. That was like, you know, a cultural bonding was the rock music.
And on the line with us this morning, Pittsburgh rock and roll legend Norm Nardini. From the Tube City Center for Business and Innovation in downtown McKeesport, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
Support for this broadcast comes from the City of McKeesport Fair Housing Office. Fair housing is your right, and the Fair Housing Act prohibits discrimination in housing because of race, color, national origin, religion, sex, gender identity, sexual orientation, family status, or disability. That includes renting or buying a home, getting a mortgage, seeking housing assistance, or engaging in other housing-related activities. For more information about Fair Housing Act protections in the City of McKeesport, call 412-675-5020, extension 635.
Norman Nardini is on the phone with us right now. You can find him on Facebook at Norman Nardini Music. You can also get his music from Apple Music and from wherever you download music. His most recent album was 2019, Notorious was the name of it. Let me take me back a little bit further. You were born where? Brookline? Did I read that correctly?
No. I was born in Homewood, Brushton.
Okay, Homewood, Brushton area. But you graduated from Churchill High School, I think.
Yeah, we lived in Homewood, Brushton until I was like 4 or 5. Then we moved to Cheswick, Route 28, for about 5 years. And then when I was 11 years old, we moved to Wilkins Township, and then I went to high school through there.
Mom and dad musical, or how did you get this love of music? How did you get your love of music?
I think I was born with it, you know.
Yeah.
I was a little kid. Me and my parents went up in New Kensington, and we saw a music store, and I saw an accordion. I think I was 4.
Yeah.
And I told my parents I wanted that. And like a year or so later, they got me an accordion, so I started playing accordion when I was 5 or 6. And I started taking lessons, you know, on how to read music and how to play a little bit. And then I kind of lost interest for about a year or two. And then I discovered the guitar, like, when I was, like, 10 years old. And then and that was that. You know, by the time I was 14, I was working all the time. And I had a career. I knew what I was going to do with the rest of my life when I was 14.
Wow.
I had no question about how I was going to spend my life and my pursuits, you know.
When did you pick up a guitar for the first time?
I was probably about 10.
How'd you learn to play?
My parents took me to these group guitar lessons down in East Liberty. This old Greek guy was given, there'd be like 15 people in the room, and we'd have an acoustic guitar, and we would all learn the chords, you know. And I wasn't a very natural guitar player, you know. I wasn't a very natural keyboard player either, you know, when I played accordion. But I just kept pecking at it, and I really fell deeply into the music above my ability to play these instruments. My ability to hear and feel and understand the music was better than my ability to play the instruments, you know, which was weird. You know, I was a weird kid in that way.
I think you have to be passionate about something like that. Norman Nardini is our guest right now. After you graduated from Churchill High School, you got some classical training in music. Where did you go?
When I was a senior in high school, they offered a class called classical, I don't know if they used the word classical, but it was called Music Theory and Harmony.
Mm-hmm.
It was a special class for only the smart kids. And I wasn't one of the smart kids, but I really wanted to take that class. And it was like a great class, like a really great in-depth study of how music works. And they wouldn't let me in a class, so my mother went up to the school and said, hey, my son wants in that class. And the principal said, well, your son's grades aren't good enough to get in. And she said, hey, let me ask you a question. She said, how many kids that you have in your band and are given lessons to do you think are going to end up being professional musicians? He said, none. And she said, well, my son already is a professional musician. He's been working out since he was 14. He brings money home every week. You got to let him in this class. Mm-hmm. So the principal said, all right, we'll let him in. But if he don't do good, we're flunking him and throwing him out of the class. And I ended up doing well. And it was really difficult. And it was so fantastic. I use everything I learned in that class to this day. I ended up going to Berklee School of Music for a minute when I got in my early 20s. And I learned more in that class than I did at Berklee School of Music.
Gotcha.
And so I quit, you know, Berklee and came back home. And then I started working at that studio, Fox.
Fox, yeah.
Which led to the Ain't That Peculiar record, which led to the McKee Sports Show, which led to me and you here rapping today.
What were you listening to as a teenager? What kind of music were you listening to?
I was listening to just pop music, you know, what was on the radio. And then, you know, and I loved soul music. You know, we used to listen to Porky Chedwick. So, so we would listen to, you know, Function at the Junction, you know, by Shorty Long. And, you know, Junior Walker. You know, when I was in high school, I was playing keyboards and guitar, and I wasn't really good at either one. But I had the opportunity to rent my organ to Billy Preston, who came to town to do these shows that were all dances. And then 3 months later, Sly and the Family Stone came, and I rented my organ to them. So I got to hang out backstage with those guys for like five shows with each band, and I really got to watch them work from the inside. I ended up doing shows with Canned Heat and got to watch them and work and how they... And I was a real student of how it was done and who was doing it and how you know, and also because of my knowledge of how music worked, I would always analyze everything everybody did and put it into terms that I could understand so that I could use it for whatever came down the road for me. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I was just always... I was so into it. I wasn't really into anything else in life at all. I didn't learn how to do anything ever. All I ever did was make music. And so, and everybody made fun of me, you know, because I wasn't that good at playing instruments at that time. You know, it took me a long time to really get good at, it took me a long time to realize that the key to being a musician or a vocalist is finding a voice on your instrument or finding a voice in your face, you know. And all those things, because of my persistence and my interest, I fell into all those things as the years went by. No. Most guys had already been out of it 20 years by the time I really started finding myself.
Norm Nardini is our guest this morning. He's on the phone with us. You can find him on Facebook at Norm Nardini Music. You can find him on Apple Music or wherever music is purchased these days. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the I want to ask you about the – you did online concerts during the COVID lockdown, which I thought were pretty cool. Describe the music scene in Pittsburgh when you were growing up, because you mentioned Porky Chedwick, and there were a lot of guys, Bob Lavorio, Porky Chedwick, Terry Lee on the radio, and there were a lot of bands around Pittsburgh at that time that I don't think were mainstream in the country. They were looking a little bit more towards the Motown sound or towards the soul sound. Talk about that. What was the music like?
Well, I come from the east side, and the east side is the soul side.
Mm-hmm.
And I say it's the place where Pittsburgh, real Pittsburgh music started. And I think real Pittsburgh music started in Penn Hills with a few talented guys. Bubs McKeag, Frank Zuri, Bob Bridy. There was a gentleman here who died in Vietnam named Jeff Bobula, who was one of the best musicians I ever met in my life. He died in Vietnam in 1968 or 69. I remember years later I was working with Paul Schaefer up in New York City, and watching Paul work and playing with him, and I realized that Jeff Bobula was better at it than him by the time he was 19 and died. And these guys were all into the soul music. You know, there was a kid named Gary Gentile who had a lot of talent. I played with a guy named Robbie Johns, the Beatman, they called him. He had a lot of talent. And so there was this East Side soul way of doing things. But along with that soul knowledge and soul interest, they also picked up on things like the Yardbirds, mm-hmm. and the Kinks, the Stones, definitely, you know.
But not as much kind of the sugar
bubblegum
type. Yeah, not in the city, at least, not so much the bubblegum type music, and certainly out in the Mon Valley, much more they were interested in the soul and the garage bands, it seems to me.
Speaking of garage bands, I remember I told you I did that thing with Sly and with mm-hmm. Billy Preston. I also did a thing for the same guy who booked those shows. Two different times he called me to pretend I was in other bands. One was the Cherry People, and the other one was a really great punk band called the Sonics. Most people say they were the first punk band of all. Mm-hmm. And we went out. He hired me and these other guys I didn't even know. And we went out and learned about five or six songs by them bands and pretended we were them, and he charged people. You know, I was supposed to be in the Sonics. I just was playing keyboards and guitar, backing up these other guys. I was never in the Sonics. But I did it for five gigs, you know. And he was like a scam artist that would pull this. He had a fake Aretha Franklin's. There was no media, so people didn't know what bands looked like.
Gotcha.
If you didn't have your picture on the cover of the album, you could send somebody else out saying they were you.
Norman Nardini, you can find on Facebook. You can also find various places online, including, as I said, Apple Music, selling his most recent albums. So you've played a lot of clubs, and it seems to me that the club scene in Pittsburgh is not what it used to be. Talk a little bit about that, because I'm thinking, you know, of all the different rock clubs, even when I was a kid, Electric Banana and the Decade and places like that, that don't exist anymore. What happened to them?
It isn't just Pittsburgh that you know, that doesn't have the rock scene. The rock scene is kind of dead, you know, around the world. It's just what happened. Things changed, and I think a lot of it had to do with radio stations not understanding the market. I think that they thought they were dictating the market as opposed to feeling the market. I think they missed the boat on so many ways. And it wasn't just the radio station's fault. I think they could have kept it going longer and stayed more involved in it if they really had their ear to the ground and had real music people involved in programming and putting together programs and music that kept people's interest. I think they just got to the point where they were so big that they just started thinking that they knew, like in any business.
Yeah.
Like they thought they knew what everybody wanted, and then before you know it, everything changed, and there you go. I think that not just Pittsburgh, but it happened all around the world, you know.
We're talking with a Pittsburgh rock legend, Norm Nardini. His most recent album was Notorious, and it came out in 2019. And we'll be back in 30 seconds to wrap things up.
Support for this broadcast comes from Striflers Family Funeral Homes. Since 1866, Striflers has provided compassionate, professional memorial services for families in White Oak, McKeesport, Dravosburg, Portview, and the surrounding areas. Striflers offers comprehensive pre-planning services and aftercare. And through its affiliated company Design Monuments, Striflers also provides permanent markers and memorials crafted in stone, bronze, and other high-quality materials. Learn more at Striflers.com or call 412-678-6191.
Norman Nardini is on the phone with us for a few more minutes. What are you listening to these days? What are you discovering these days that gets you excited, music-wise?
I listen to a guy named Paul Thorne.
Okay.
He's a like a southerner out of Tupelo, Mississippi, mm-hmm. high-level songwriter. I'm really into songwriting.
Yeah.
I listen to Steve Earle a lot. He's probably my favorite artist in the world. You know, I don't think anybody ever is better than him. Those two guys I listen to. Look for soul music, and I listen to... I've been playing with Solomon Hicks out of New York City, mm-hmm. a young blues star, rising blues star. I've been doing dates with him, and I've been listening to that. I've been always listening to Delbert McClinton, the old soul singer.
No, you're giving people an education. Let me ask you this, too, because people ask me, as a writer, I don't write songs, but I write other things. They ask me, well, how do you start writing? When you sit down and you got a blank piece of paper, how do you start writing? How do you start writing a song? Where does a song come from for you? Because you've written a lot of them.
When I first started writing songs, all I cared about was the music, mm-hmm. because that was my expertise. So I would just write music, and then I would get other guys to come in and write the words and the melodies. But I would write the track, and I would cut the track. I put the bass down, the drums down, the guitars down. And then other guys, like Frank Zuri was a great one. McKeg is a really nice songwriter in Pittsburgh. But as time went on, I started really focusing on the lyrics. And now I don't write the music at all until all the words are done. When I get a concept, like a guy said to me at a gig, you know, a couple of months ago, he said, hey, man, I was born with nothing, and I still got half of that left. And as soon as he said it, I knew. I went home and wrote that song. One of my guys said to me, hey, they took the Shady out of Shadyside. As soon as he said it, you know, you could feel the heat on Walnut Street. Yeah. All the pretty people walking to the beat, a new generation doing the Shady Side strut, all looking for something, but they didn't know what. There was a phone booth on the corner of Walnut and Aiken. The bookies, the cheaters, and dealers had it shaken. We'd all hang around checking out the scene. You could hear the panhandler play his tambourine. They took the Shady out of Shady Side. It ain't the same no more. We was all young back in the 60s, and that's where we would go. We sure learned a lot about things we should have not. Ain't nobody needs to know. We couldn't buy a bite to eat, but we owned them streets before the money come around. Got my education doing things I'd rather hide before they took the Shady out of Shady Side. That's a flow, you know. You get picked up in the groove, you know, like I've been doing it so long and have developed this style, this like street talk style of doing it, that it's real easy for me. It just happens all the time. I can't stop it now. I do it while it starts while I'm sleeping sometimes.
During the lockdown, the COVID lockdown, you started doing live concerts for people online. I'm wondering why you decided to do that and if you picked up any new fans from that.
Well, I decided to do it because I have to work.
Yeah.
It makes you feel good, mm-hmm. You know, gigging and performing. And I did it because I wanted to. I've always wanted to stand out, and I've always wanted to excel. I've always wanted to be special and be magic. And I thought that gave me a chance to show who I've become. You know, I haven't been on radio much in Pittsburgh my whole life. I've kind of scared all the radio people and the corporate people away. So I'm kind of like an underground sensation. Not kind of, I am. And so that gave me a chance to show what I've learned by being in the position I've been put in. Go on live for 2 hours straight by yourself and entertain with just your bull crap, the words to your songs, the stories that you tell about your life, who you are, the people, where you make people laugh, all those things, sit down and let me work you over. I'll give you 2 hours without taking a breath.
As a performer, that's a vulnerable position to put yourself in. That takes some guts.
A whole lot of guts. And to pull it off, it takes being the real deal. You know, and that's what happened for me. Every time I did 33 of them, I think. The first one was 3 hours, and the next 32, I think, were 2 hours.
We're going to see you on stage. We're going to see you on stage anytime soon, Norm.
Well, I've been having some troubles the past, you know, 4 months or so.
Yeah.
And but I'm really working through those. I really need to work because it feels so great. And I don't know what work means. You know, I've done different ways of presenting myself. I've always been a band leader. So I imagine there'll be some of that again. I don't know when, but there'll be some performing by myself, a little bit more like the Norman Nardini show where I just go by myself, play out by myself. So there'll be some things like that. I just don't know when. Like I say, I'm fighting through some struggles.
Yeah. Norman Nardini has been our guest this morning. We talked to him first about the 50th anniversary of that major concert with Diamond Rio, Aerosmith, and Brownsville Station at Renzi Park in McKeesport that happened back on October 27th, 1974. But we've also talked more about his career. You can download his music legally. And Norman gets a cut, I hope, at Apple Music and other places. Thank you. Hopefully we'll see you soon. Take care.
Bless you.
You've been listening to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, copyright Tube City Community Media, Incorporated. Opinions expressed on this program are not those of Tube City Community Media, Incorporated. Listener support makes this program possible. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible contribution, please visit our website at tubecityonline.com and click on the donate link. You can also get a free subscription to this program and other podcasts at our website using Apple's iTunes or Stitcher.com. If you've got a question or comment, we hope you'll write to us. Our address is Tube City Community Media Incorporated, P.O. Box 94, McKeesport, PA, 15134. You can email us at TubeCityTiger@gmail.com or call us at area code 412-614-9659. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.